Hey, buddy. What's up?
What's up, little guy?
What's up, little buddy?
What you doing?
Would you like it flat water or sparkling water?
Well, it's flat. It's fine for me.
Plus sparkling great. Would be great.
Is this sparkling for you?
Sparkling.
He's a sparkle.
He's got an astounding haircut.
Yes.
Jeffrey, thanks for writing nice things about us.
He read the... I
had like 20 people forward me the beard article.
Sorry.
Hence the beard.
I'm going to turn this on.
Sorry, let me go talk to my son. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I'm in the middle of this interview. What's going on? No. Why?
I'm going swimming there.
Great.
That makes me happy.
All right.
It's so okay. Wonderful, especially right now,
mm-hmm.
to have somebody absolutely solid who's not
you
like
have to worry about if she's getting her attention.
Yeah, I got no histrionics and just like mm-hmm. I come home and I'm stressed out. She's like, "Can I rub your feet? What do you need tomorrow?" Which is like you're
kidding me, right? Yeah.
So now that the beard is history, there's no more Zach Galifianakis comparisons.
That's fine. He'll be shaving.
No analogies.
He'll be shaving his soon enough.
He will be.
Wait till he sees this look.
Am I the only, did anybody else go there as far as the two of you? You know, some
I don't
more time.
Think so.
I've heard it mentioned. I've never seen it in print before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I hated that movie.
I thought it was much better than your typical, if there is a typical, getting wasted and having to deal with the consequences.
Well, the jokes were funnier, and the actors were fine. There was just no heart. I mean, I just didn't give a fuck about the movie.
Right.
Look, okay. there were some funny jokes.
Well, some wines, what do they want?
Oh, right.
Specials, we have the buffalo mozzarella, with spurs, roasted peppers. We have a grilled baby squid. Shrimps with garlic and pepper, very spicy. Serrano hen, you know serrano hen?
Mm-hmm.
Jamon serrano.
Well, I know that I would really love your buffalo mozzarella salad. That would be great.
Let's get one of those and the ham as well.
So you guys share in the hand if you want a piece of mozzarella.
Sounds great.
Okay, the main course will be the fish. Chili and zibes filet grill. Frank style free for me, you know, with the scrolls of the young girl, way reasons of opening. The same way we have a grilled rack of veal, if you want to eat. Rack of veal is one of the best white meat. Pasta special, homemade, green fettuccine seafood with Manila clams, shrimps, New Zealand mussels, and fresh lobster. You have your choices, white wine sauce, marinara.
We'll go for that. With the white wine sauce.
Not spicy. You want a spicy or not spicy? Spicy. Perfect.
I might look at a menu too.
Sure. Yeah. No problem.
See what calls I want to make. Thank you.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you very much.
Between the salad and what I just ordered,
that's
probably pretty good.
Thanks. Can we get the special buffalo that we got? Does that come with?
With a fresh roasted.
Okay, can we get some sliced tomatoes with it as well?
Just going tomatoes.
Or did you kind of want that for yourself? Should I get another
one? No, but can one piece.
Yeah, get another one.
Okay.
Keep one piece tomato with one piece of mozzarella on the top in the wrong.
Okay, so let's get two orders of that.
Yeah, we can. It'll be better for three.
I want to give you one each, one piece of mozzarella each.
Okay.
It's well good. That's
good.
Thank you.
Great.
Love it.
He wants to do it. And weirdly, he's from Cleveland, which is astounding that he picked up that accent.
Love it. Akron. Suburbs.
Akron, right.
Yes.
Oh, there is that whole enclave in Akron.
So when you guys meet strange women at parties who are vaguely familiar with you, but you know, need a little coaching, do you say to them, well, I'm a sort of one of the key members of the mumblecore movement? Does that line ever work?
I have yet to pull that one. I think it's worth.
I don't think it would mean anything to most.
I think it would be really funny if we tried that.
To which the response is the what?
I mean, I don't even know, because that would be as if they had maybe vaguely heard of it. I think it would be much more angry than that. I don't know how that would go over, but I'm assuming it would be worth videotaping.
I also feel at this point that I'm maybe only an honorary member, that I haven't been completely inducted.
Kind of got
grandfathered in through Blair Witch, but I'm still on tentative status. But out of curiosity, I've heard you use that term. I mean, is it
mumblecore?
Is it something that you guys embrace, or is it more a press thing?
Well, it's definitely a press thing. And I don't know who created it, but it was sort of adopted by New York Times, I think, at some point.
New Yorker magazine, when they used it, David Denby used it,
Denby article,
in the review of that Joe Swanberg film. I just lost the title.
One of them. And I mean, the only time I've ever used it is when someone asked me the question, "How do you feel about the mumblecore movement?" And then I'm then forced to use it referentially. But I don't really use it to refer to us. I mean, I'm not like one of those people who's like, "I refuse to be this, I don't see that," you know, like, yeah, there's some similarities, definitely, like, handheld video cameras and naturalistic performances, like, there's a symmetry to it all, but, you know.
Some of the same actors, and you guys inspire each other, but yeah. I think any kind of reference to movement implies something far more premeditated than what actually happens, which is, you know, just that people, and I think especially with this group of filmmakers, it's, you know, highly technology based, is that a bunch of people kind of adopted the same visual vernacular at the same time
because it was cheap. Easy. And I may be getting kicked out of Mumblecore because we made a Fox Searchlight movie, so I'm probably in deep shit.
Excommunicated.
Yeah.
There seems to be a kind of a stepladder thing going on. Within the last year, there have been people that are Swanberg films, or, you know, they're being asked to talk about being in more mainstream films. I mean, you know, it seems like people are coming to you guys.
There's a certain level of that. I mean, when my brother and I made The Puffy Chair in 2005, that really kind of launched us, just in terms of us writer-directors, into a different era. But then, you know, our friend Greta Gerwig was cast in Noah Baumbach's movie, and I did a role in Noah Baumbach's movie. So maybe, you know, that was the first time that some of the actors kind of came out. That's a little more recent than maybe the writer-directors of the movement.
I'm still waiting.
People are not?
Bullshit. Josh isn't hung. You know this new HBO show?
Yeah.
You know this HBO television show, Hung? Have you seen the wonderful Go and Pimp billboards all around town?
Yeah.
Jane Addams and Thomas Jane. Josh has
Hung. Is it begun yet?
It starts on Sunday.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
I got a sick TiVo.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that's, I mean, I'm doing, playing Jane Addams' boyfriend in a few episodes of that. Uh-huh. But that wasn't a direct translation. That's true. That wasn't somebody saw Hump Day and said, "We need that guy."
Yeah.
The reason I brought up the Zach comparison in a previous thing is that, you know, people were so excited about seeing him in this film, and I thought he was, I just don't think he had half of what you have going on in between the two of you. I mean, just comparing you alone, I just thought it was, there's an ease and a comfort, a naturalism that
far better
between
standards.
You guys, it's great, it really, really
Thanks
works.
So
I know it's probably the result of, I'm guessing, there's a 10-to-1 ratio of the stuff that you shot, and that he had used the very best, and it all worked.
Definitely that going on.
But it really is. I mean, I've seen this type of thing, and it really is. It's like butter. This whole thing. What you guys do together is great.
I think you're awesome. I'd love to hang out with you just more and more.
I would love you to say those types of things at parties around famous directors.
Yeah,
really,
exactly.
Really women.
Okay.
Jeffrey, what were you saying earlier?
Yeah, I always forget.
I came to the. I'll come to that thing on Friday.
Go on.
I'll spread it around.
Go on, Jeffrey. guys, Jeffrey wants to say something. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
I think it's part of that. I think it's partially that. You know, Mark and I knew each other going in.
Right.
That you know, and also without giving ourselves too much credit or taking any credit away from Lynn whatsoever, the fact that we're both writing directors as well, and so there was a bit of that kind of eye towards story as we were acting without getting too involved in or myopic in the actor moments going on, right, knowing that we kind of had to serve the story in that way.
Yeah, I mean, when you set that as your goal from the front, and then that, you know, we want a really strong story, and we want really believable, naturalistic performances that make you feel like you're in the room.
Right.
You really put the laser on that the whole way through. You know, it helps, and I think a lot of people, I mean, it sounds... It sounds kind of like that's an obvious goal, that people should be doing that, going into any film, but in my experience, it's not the case. You know, there's a lot of other things that can really distract from that. You know, this one thing we had on this set was a essentially egoless set, in that there was no, it has to be my idea or this idea. It was all about how do we find the best idea possible, you know? And things like that, just they just all help to feed into a certain kind of energy that the movie has, which I guess you say there's a certain ease to it, you know. And the film was shot in 9 to 10 days, and it was not an incredibly difficult experience to make, honestly.
Now, there was a threadbare script, right?
No script, just a scene outline.
Outline.
A very detailed scene outline, no.
So no dialogue, but... Well mapped out intentions and beats. I think that's the other thing in terms of juxtaposing this one against other kind of quote mumblecore movies is a lot of those movies just start with character and relationship, and you know, it's kind of a we'll figure out the story as we go.
Right.
Not so much Puppet Chair Baghead, but you know, it's some of the more kind of like real hipster Mike Lee adjacent stuff, whereas this one started out as a one-line pitch, like, you know, and it was a high concept that we reverse engineered into something that attempts to, you know, be very human and explorational. But so we knew, you know, we knew what the A story was the whole time, which saved us from spending too much time talking about chocolate bananas, as Mark likes to refer to it.
Happens real fast on an improv set.
You know, I like this place right away because these are not typical salads.
Yeah.
You know, this is not your typical buffalo mozzarella. You know.
Well, and right away, he made it for us. He's like, okay, I'll make you each a little appropriately sized salad.
Did you say 9 to 10 days? You just said that, right?
9 to 10 days.
Nothing occurred to anybody after you looked at it all? We can always go back and maybe do a makeup or redo something to make it, I mean, the Woody Allen
shot. We reshot one of the scenes that was one of the earlier scenes. Mm-hmm. We had an editor on set. Our editor, Nat Sanders, was a pretty integral part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost, it's really like editing a documentary. That editor has his own authorship. And
no two takes are ever the same.
Yeah.
Lots of 5-minute scenes in the movie that were, you know, culled out of 40-minute takes.
Mm-hmm. And he saw early on that one of the scenes we shot wasn't as good as it could be, so we reshot it.
Mm-hmm.
So there were little things like that, but essentially we had mapped out the story ahead of time enough, and we felt pretty confident that it would work the way it was, and you know, it was.
We started talking about 4 months before we shot.
Yeah. So while it was executed fairly quickly, you got to realize that there's only so many locations in this movie. We don't spend a lot of time on lighting setups. We probably spent more time on the actual performances in those 9 to 10 days,
right,
than some people spend in a 30-day shoot.
Main house of the party house you go to, motel, and downstairs basement. That's pretty much it, right?
His office.
My office.
Oh, yeah. Could I ask a question, please?
Yes, sir.
Would you mind terribly if we didn't have the music quite as loud? Just while we're, I'm just recording a.
No problem, sir.
Right.
You want me to stop?
We don't, you don't have to kill it. Just if you could turn it down a bit. Great.
Thank you.
Okay. That's.
Yeah, thank you.
No, no, no. That's perfect. Do you think I could get a? Can I get an Arnold Palmer, sir?
Was it?
Arnold Palmer. Just half lemonade, half iced tea. Do you have
lemonade,
that?
Half tea, lemonade. If you want it, we can put iced tea with a crush of lemon.
Sounds
inside.
Great. Perfect. Lovely.
You have, do you mind the main course?
Would I like?
Do you mind? You like Engelbert? You know Engelbert Humperdinck?
Engelbert Humperdinck?
You like him?
I'm not, I never had that compare. I've tried a Chris Walken thing, but
I've been here a couple months ago. Yeah. So I know you want to pass a special white sauce.
Yeah.
Do you have some sort of spicy arrabbiata sauce that you like?
Yes, arrabbiata?
Yeah, something like a penne,
no,
arrabbiata?
No.
No, just okay. Kind of straight.
Okay,
yeah.
Look at the, tell me about the sea bass again.
It's the best fish in the world. Grilled, French style, 3 minutes. We don't use oven, we use the fire. Just grillé, français.
Perfect.
I'll take it. Vegetables.
Lovely. How can you say no after that? That's not really what I
wanted. Nah, I don't think so.
Anyway, if someone had told me prior to seeing it, which I finally saw it at Sundance at the Racquet Club. I didn't see it earlier. I saw it late in the Sundance.
Okay.
Someone had told me that this... that it works on the level of this. There's just this straight guy feeling all the way through it. That's the only kind of. There isn't a. Despite your recollection about the video store,
right?
I don't know what you were alluding to, but I didn't get a whiff of bisexuality from you. Not even like, you know.
You mean previous to that moment, or even in that moment?
In any way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. It just doesn't come out. And that's why, I guess maybe that's because I'm a closet homophobe or something, but I felt very comfortable with you guys. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well,
yeah. But I thought there might be some actual fucking going on when I heard the premise. So.
I mean, we talked a lot about sort of the things we wanted to focus on, and we definitely felt that,
yeah.
You know, these guys, the way to play this thing was to just play up their connection to each other and play up a little bit of their sort of, you know, quarter-life crisis that they're going on, and that the decision to do this thing comes from a place more of just ridiculous desperation and being lost in their lives in a way that, you know, makes them come up with a ridiculous decision to try and solve some of those problems.
Right.
And that...
And so the having sex with each other is kind of symbolic. I think, like we say in the end of the movie, it's this completely asinine, arbitrary thing that could have been any, you know, gauntlet drop.
Right.
And that's just fucking funny. Like, two straight guys trying to out-macho each other, you know, in terms of, like, a game of chicken of who's going to back down off having sex with the other one first is, I think, a good way to kind of turn the buddy movie on its head and... get some of the subtext out on the table. And I think we talked about it, that, you know, I think the more expected thing is for one of those guys to be secretly in the closet and kind of dealing with that, and that's it would have just been a more obvious, kind of less interesting way to go, and a completely different movie.
Completely off the wall thoughts, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Binder?
Yeah.
Mind of the Married Man.
Rain Over Me, the Adam Sandler thing.
I never saw that film.
That was really good. And Upside of Anger.
Kevin Costner.
He has this script that I would... I loved the instant I heard. Basically, it's two comics.
Mm-hmm.
Performers.
Mm-hmm.
Stand-up guys, and they go over to Iraq as part of some government group tour and around, and the entire focus of their relationship during the thing is all about their own stuff. It's all about one-upsmanship. It's all about women that they meet there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't pay one second attention to the whole thing, and it is hilarious, the idea of ignoring all that.
Mm-hmm.
and it's all about, you know, fuck you. And I'm,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I just thought, and I just thought that you guys would be perfect.
I think there is something there. Yeah.
And that,
that,
you know,
context. We may have already done that movie on some level. But yeah, there is certain, there's a symmetry in terms of, you know, there's a big element looming in this film, you know, about, you know, issues of sexuality and things like that. But
right.
In a lot of ways, the focus is very much in the microcosm, the inside of these guys, and what's going on with them.
You don't want to pigeonhole yourself, of course. But has anybody talked to you about doing another film together just because your chemistry is so good? Because it's so relaxed and so...
Not really. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, Josh and I, for about, you know, 4 seconds, thought about doing something.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Cannes with the movie, and we're like, oh, maybe just San Fran to do something else, you know. Yeah, I don't. No one has brought that to us yet. It's interesting. Like, Hump Day, in a lot of ways, feels like it's been in the world for so long, but I keep forgetting that, like, oh, it hasn't even come out in theaters yet. Like,
has it come out in theaters?
Right here.
Thank you so much. It's beautiful. And we shot it a year ago.
Yeah.
And it's all been so fast.
Very, very quick.
I'd do another movie with you if somebody paid me a shitload of money.
It would have to be a lot.
Right, yeah.
Because it was fucking hard. I don't want to do that again.
The 10 days you don't want to do it again.
Separate trailers.
Exactly. Double bangers? I don't think so.
Or, you know, I could also see, you know, some kind of HBO or Showtime series,
mm-hmm.
you know. I don't know what the premise would be, but I would definitely watch that in a heartbeat.
Hey, you come up with something. If you know the right people,
yeah,
put some calls in.
Call them up.
Well, I'll upload it in the piece. And, you know, I just think it's...
That's great.
Yeah.
Mark's doing a TV show.
Yeah, I am doing a TV show.
You're about to do a series, you mean?
About to do a series, although we can't print it yet because it's not, they're not going to release it, but one of the, some of the creators of Curve started a new show on FX that I'm going to play one of the roles in. It'll be an improv kind of thing, kind of up our alley.
Who's, now I'm blanking on it again, but there's a mumblecore actress who's in a Ben Stiller movie.
Greta Gerwig, who's in a movie I directed called Baghead, and, she plays the lead opposite Ben Stiller, and I actually play a role in that movie as well.
Oh, sorry.
Playing Ben Stiller's old bandmate and best friend.
So you've seen the feature?
It's just shot.
Yeah.
They just shot in March and April. No, shot in April. So they just wrapped.
Kind of gloomy today. I've started to realize that the whole Iranian green revolution thing is being really stepped on big time.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. In fact, I noticed yesterday that things are happening at kind of a rapid pace because I was on a plane all day, and I felt like when I landed and read stuff, like a lot of stuff had already changed, you know, like in the course of 9 hours or something.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's very interesting. Did you see that huge protest in Westwood? We were at the LA Film Festival just a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge, I mean, really.
They're fucking angry, man.
A couple hundred people.
Like so.
Yeah.
You mean in front of the federal building? Or do you mean in front of...
No, I don't know where the federal building is, honestly. But it was at this was in LA, like on Westwood, right near, sorry, on Wilshire, right by Westwood.
Yeah.
Right near the 405. I'm not sure what the significance
is. Yeah, that's the federal building.
That is
fairly,
the federal building.
Fairly
okay.
close to it.
Yeah. So
that's also exactly where they did the Prop, did like the first big Prop Ed marches.
Oh, really? Okay.
If you want to get a passport at the last second.
Yeah.
Which you can always do. You know, you can get it in one day if you're really up against it.
Really?
You have a ticket.
Go to the federal building.
You're there first thing in the morning, and you have to fly out, say, the next day. They'll make an
announcement. Incredible. And you still pay the expedited fees, I'm assuming.
I guess, yeah.
I did it in 24 hours through an expediter in Glendale.
What, just for going over to Cannes recently? When you're
I was going away to do a film last year.
Right.
And it was the day before, and I was like, I should check my passport.
and then you had lightning in your body.
Yeah.
I know that feeling. That's a special feeling. That bolt just strikes up and down.
So what's the story of the tat? Is that a
oh, it's a deer. They're both deer.
Okay.
I like deer.
All right.
Grew up in Pennsylvania around here.
I'm telling you, I got a great deer song for you.
A deer song? Not the band The Deers.
No. Who I played a show with in Amsterdam one time. Do you know them?
I mean,
there's Lonely Deer. That's different. This is a mid-lake song about deer that I think you'll like.
Mm-hmm. You gonna direct something again sometime soon?
Yeah. That's really I would say at least half of what I do, and maybe potentially more. And traditionally, I have been known more as a writer-director, although really getting into the acting thing lately, because I have a little bit of an Atlas-type personality, and shouldering a whole movie as a director with my brother is stressful, whereas Josh and I going out and improvising together, going home and hanging out with my wife and my daughter is, it's a different lifestyle, you know? But my brother and I just directed a movie for Fox Searchlight that we wrote that was sort of our first, you know, for us, a huge movie, you know. Yeah, I'm done with that, thank you very much. And it doesn't have a title at the moment, but it was, it's sort of like it's like a bizarre little love triangle with John C. Reilly, Marissa Tomei, Jonah Hill, and Catherine Keener. And it's very much what we've always done, very domestic, very personal, very much about the connections going on between those characters. And I think, you know, we're just editing right now. Probably come out early next year.
So it might be at Sundance?
It might be, yeah. We might. That, I could see that as a potential path, maybe like a Sundance premiere and then a spring rollout. Searchlight's so good at releasing movies that I'm really just going to let them do their thing because they know more than I do, you know.
Nancy Utley.
Yeah. Awesome.
I keep forgetting the other guy's name that she's sharing.
Oh, you mean since Peter left?
Yeah.
It's
running it with
something. Yeah. It's
advertising guy.
Steve. I can't remember his name either. Yeah. Good people.
I love that it's untitled.
Yeah.
You must have had a title of some sort. You just don't.
We've had a couple at certain times, and then. You know, as always with our movies, they change in the shooting, and you know, just particularly a love triangle movie is something hard to title that honors the fact that it's a love triangle, but doesn't sound completely stock and derivative of every other love triangle film. So it's really just a creative challenge. Like, we haven't been able to come up with anything good yet. So.
What was my favorite?
Don't fuck my mom.
Yeah, so good.
That's pretty good.
It is good. Yeah, I enjoy it. But there's a danger of, it's a very sensitive, it's funny, but it's a very sensitive little movie. And when you have Jonah Hill and John C. Reilly and Marissa Tomei and it says, don't fuck my mom, I would be worried that someone's coming for a raging Apatow experience where, you know, we're not really delivering that, you know.
Well, you know, that's kind of really a lovely idea, is that the people that think that they are to primarily force obvious popcorn humor, and then something else happens, and then they come out slightly, oh, that was a little bit of an opener.
There is that approach. I heard Ted Hope speak one time about that very thing when he was marketing in the bedroom, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone said, look, I saw the trailer for this movie, and the trailer for this movie is not what this movie is, you know?
Right.
How do you feel about that? Is there an ethical thing, you know? And he said something to the tune of, you know, the movie is essentially about a young boy who gets shot in the face, and then some old people mourn for 90 minutes. And he's like, that's a little tough to get people in the theater, but I believe in this movie, and I believe they'll enjoy it. So, I'll mispitch it 30% to get them in there, because I know they'll like it.
I think it's about a guy who gets shot in the face, the father mourns, but then comes to the decision. That's cool. That's the interesting
thing.
And then Lady Macbeth got him into to do it, and you know, that's the interesting thing.
I haven't seen the movie since literally the day it opened in the theaters, so I'm curious how it holds. Have you guys seen it recently at all?
I haven't seen it in years. Yeah. I saw it after that, but
yeah.
Jeffrey, where are you from?
I was born in Westfield, Elizabeth, New Jersey. Grew up in Westfield, moved to Connecticut, Wilton, Connecticut, when I was like 15.
Right.
So and you, still, you live here now?
I moved back just because my two sons are in the area. I just don't see them enough.
Where are they? Are they going to school or?
Jet goes to the older is going to the Cy Newhouse Communication School in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. Good journalism school. Yeah, he's working at MTV News right now.
Oh, great.
And Dylan is parking in Philly where he goes to the University of the Arts.
Okay.
Okay. I grew up in Pennsylvania. I got a bunch of friends who went to that school.
What about Pennsylvania?
I grew up there.
Oh, you did?
A bunch of my friends I grew up with.
You mean rural or near Philly?
Smack dab central between Philly and Pittsburgh.
The Alabama part?
Yeah, kind of the Alabama. We had the Grand Dragon of the local KKK. It was about a mile down from our house. But my dad taught at Penn State. So we wound up there.
Is that Altoona? Penn State?
No, I mean they got off campus. I mean the name of the town is yeah. State College, which just always confuses people.
Yeah, I know that. I've heard that before.
I just got that line from something I heard on MSNBC during the campaign that it's, you know, it's an East Coast industrial city, but it's Alabama in between Pittsburgh
yeah.
and.
Yeah. I buy that.
It was a James Carville line or something, I think.
He can say it because he's got the accent.
Yeah.
And the devil may care attitude.
Yeah. And my mom is she's living in a assisted living facility up near Southbury.
Okay. And it's so just got all just kinds feels, of elements around yeah. that make it worthwhile right. to be
plus
here.
Plus the city makes me feel like I'm 17 years old.
So felt that when I came in last night.
Yeah. You know.
And how'd you get into...
this line of work.
Yeah.
I just had a. My 20s were mostly about anger at my father, sex, drugs, rock and roll, girlfriends, and nothing of a career thing until I decided. I woke up and decided I had to be a film journalist when I was like 26 years old. Mm. So. And I just, I just suffered for about 3 or 4 years of waiting tables and. Mm-hmm. Restaurants and just, you know, trying to write for anybody, and it gradually happened.
That's great.
Didn't do the master's at the Fine Arts of Journalism.
Sure.
Didn't, yeah. Wasn't mentored, didn't have the route that the, you know, the smarter, more focused yeah. young person would do.
Interesting that your path is very similar to a lot of paths of filmmakers, actors, the people you're going to be interviewing. It's a very, you know,
yeah.
you struggle through your 20s trying to figure it out, you hustle, you make mistakes, whatever. Yeah. This is for him.
Seabass.
That is wow, incredibly
that
beautiful
was
amount of seabass. Thank you, my friend.
I got a shit ton of food here, so if you want.
And that is a veritable shit ton.
And that is a flounder. Fish of some sort.
Sea bass.
That's gorgeous.
Yes, thank you.
You want any of this? A little spicy pasta?
Take a bite and say, I'm actually not all that hungry anymore.
Suddenly after the salad?
Perfect.
Thank you. Now, I'm fine, thank you.
Where is home for you two guys right now as we speak?
LA,
we live within a couple of miles of each other on the east side of town, Silver Lake and Echo Park.
From Parma tissue?
I think a little bit. Yeah, thank you. I've been there for about three or four years. Lived in New York, lived in Greenpoint for about 5 or 6 years.
Silver Lake and Echo Park is where all people of character live in Los Angeles, I guess. You know, that's like,
it's like four of them in Venice.
My favorite part of Los Angeles, without question, is the area right next to Abbot Kinney, between Abbot Kinney and the beach, that kind of
mm-hmm.
old homes and old, mm-hmm. big old bungalows.
Very beautiful.
Big trees.
I have a friend who lives out there
that I never see because
it's too far.
It's too far, but she's on one of those walk streets.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, the canals are actually cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I actually like the crispier stuff.
So just to be clear again, I mean, I know you're working on the film that's going to come out, and you're in the television thing.
Yeah.
But you're telling me that the, you know, people like just bigger directors, bigger movies, they're not talking to you at least? I mean, I would be. I mean, it's a vital thing to...
Yeah.
You don't want to be just using the same old, and you guys are starting to happen big time. So why don't they at least say, you know, I'm thinking about you for this role, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't.
Because they know that until Hump Day is at the very least a viral success,
okay,
even barring, you know, theatrical success, that we can't fund their movies.
Yeah.
Now, that is, you know, changing a little bit. The star system is not as strong as it once was, particularly right. for comedies. And then a movie like The Hangover, that doesn't have huge stars in it, can mm-hmm. blow up. So, I mean, Josh and I are pretty well positioned as actors right now, in terms of, you know, the studios are starting to realize that the stars are not everything, and sometimes the concept of the movie is the star, and that is kind of what's happening with Humphrey right now. So.
I think this is the most exciting thing. I mean, I don't believe that the suits are going to ever really embrace this, but mm-hmm. the idea that it's the movie itself that people want to see,
yeah.
as opposed to stars, I think that's beautiful. I love that.
It's revolutionary and should be completely obvious. But, yeah. I mean,
poor John Travolta and Denzel with that, what I thought was a better Pelham 1-2-3. Mm-hmm. I thought it was better made. I really did. I didn't. And the Tony Scott mm-hmm. style, everything being, you know, very hyper and very
yeah,
very
good for that movie.
Did you guys happen to see that?
I did see it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You saw. You went to the premiere, didn't
mm-hmm.
you?
Are you a fan of the old one? Have you seen?
You know, I had not seen the old one, and I wasn't even aware of kind of what it was. So
okay.
I was easy for me to like it.
Right.
But, you know,
I mean, we're going to be fine. The fact is, I mean, nobody's fucking working right now. And at least Mark and I have jobs
mm-hmm.
doing things we like with mm-hmm. cool people.
I think what's going to happen is we're going to get 35 to 40 offers a year for little movies
mm-hmm.
that want us to make them the next Hump Day. Because
mm-hmm.
that's what actors get.
Right.
Yeah.
People who are in the tier below them, trying to get them, bring them up, and then actors are always looking up, trying to get brought up to that tier. And that's the way of the world, and all the casting directors know who we are because they've all seen the movie, and
yeah.
a lot of the directors know who we are, and mm-hmm. we know them from, honestly, from being filmmakers, too. And so, I think that, you know, fortunately or unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
by the fall, we'll know what the status of Hump Day's theatrical success will be. And that will mean a lot in terms of just the nuts and bolts of whether Josh and I can get approved to lead movies. You know? And
I also think, in the meantime, though, and I think Mark came to it a little bit with a little bit more integrity than I did, maybe, because he kind of came in with his own movies and has really built a career around that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, when Blair Witch came out, I didn't know what the fuck I wanted to do, so I just kind of meandered for a long time. Until probably about 4 years ago when I, you know, I at least came pretty clear in my own life about what was important and what I was going to put my energy into and hope that I could figure out a way to kind of keep the bills paid on the side.
There are other interests diverting you? Other things besides acting, you mean? Or?
Well, yeah. I mean, I had a documentary that came out theatrically last year that I co-directed. I've got a couple short films that I did.
Right.
I've got a film that I'm producing later this summer and one that I'm hopefully directing in the fall. So we're also not in a situation where, you know, it's the traditional kind of like sitting at the coffee bean, drinking a latte, waiting for the phone to ring.
You have kind of an Owen Wilson vibe, too, a little bit.
Somebody else said that.
I've been told that. In fact, not only have I been told that, I was at a party about 7 or 8 years ago, and this producer, this kind of friend of a friend, I knew him peripherally, met him twice, grabbed me out of a crowd. Well, hey man, so nice to see you. I mean, really far more emphatic than our peripheral relationship
mm-hmm.
deserved.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, I want to introduce you to some people. Jack, Mary, this is Owen. Owen, Jack.
Incredible.
Just such a jackass situation to be in.
You think the nose alone would be the
would be a dead giveaway?
You'd have the nose before you
have a fucked up nose.
Yes.
But you know, I mean, look, he's a super talented actor, so.
He is, but I'd rather have Josh in a second any day.
Are you West fans? Have you do you like? Have you been staying with West, or do you are you cooling on him like?
Bottle Rockets is still to this day. When I first saw that movie, absolutely blew my mind.
Yeah, I am in full agreement.
Rushmore is for me the penultimate. I think that's.
I think Rushmore is incredible as well.
I'm a Royal Tenenbaums guy. I would go Royal Tenenbaums before Rushmore even.
I go Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, and then I start to fall.
Well, I don't particularly think that I would be a good actor in a Wes Anderson movie necessarily. And that there's a precision with which he does things and an aesthetic and that on some level I feel like the performances need to subordinate to the painting that he is creating for everyone. And
there is a real discipline and a precision.
Yeah,
right.
And so while I was asked to do that in Noah Baumbach's movie, in terms of precision, it was still coming very much from a place of character first. But just he has ways that he likes to hear that. He has a precision that has to do with character, whereas I think Wes's precision is a little bit more, you know, an aesthetic thing. And so, yeah, it's a certain kind of, for me personally, I feel like it's a certain kind of thing I'm good at, and I'd rather be doing those kinds of things than, you know, be put in a position where I'm just like feeling like it's not my skill set and I might be disappointing myself and those around me.
I think that this is what makes people movie stars. You really like the flavor, the tone, the vibe they put out, who they seem to be. You don't think that you're watching a performance as much as you're really watching them, and they are that thing. And real movie stars, they do that over and over again. They don't vary it that much.
You're right about accents. That. I mean, with George Clooney, people want to be with him.
Yeah.
They want to hang out with him for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And Denzel.
Yeah. I feel very, very comfortable with Denzel. I've seen him do anything. I know he's not going to mess with that thing too much. He's going to pretty much stay in that, you know.
Yeah, but
and I like it.
Yeah,
like,
and at the same time, doesn't draw attention to himself. He's enough in the character that he serves the movie completely, but brings enough of himself that there's a Pavlovian comfort going on.
Right.
Jeff, do you want some of this? Really good, actually.
I would actually like to have just a lighter bite of that.
It's the sea bass is great. I'm just full.
Thank you.
Want to try any of this pasta?
Yes, I'll try that.
Pretty good.
Take one bite of that pasta with a little piece of ham.
I didn't like the ham.
You didn't like the ham?
It felt very
old.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
But it wasn't my way. I thought it should have greens. This place is really good. Yeah.
But this is good. This is a very.
And that's New York, dude. I mean, how many amazing places are we never ever gonna know about?
Yeah. You go to the Vista Theater on Sunset.
That's my favorite theater.
I love that. That's like the.
Best theater in LA.
The Lego thing.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Right.
I'm a massive claustrophobe, which keeps me away from seeing almost any movie opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the Vista is the one exception.
Because you got leg room.
The Vista is the only theater that I can sit in a center aisle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And not potentially have a panic attack.
Have you seen these things, or do you know anybody that has one of these?
I mean,
the elf.
Not the black one. I have the earlier generations, the silver elf.
Can you see it?
Did they?
I got to get a new. I got to get a snapshot camera.
Yeah. Well, this has a. You flip a switch and it's 720
video.
Really?
That's new. That's different.
And it, you know, goes into the 16:9 thing, you know. I got it.
I'm gonna get you just more of the fish.
You got to press down on the button a little bit, you know, to get the focus.
Joshy is a former photographer. Yeah, some foods.
It's a great little camera. Because somebody, Eric Escobar, was recommending the Panasonic, which has the Leica lens on it,
mm-hmm.
which
uh-huh.
looks really, is it the Leica or the Zeiss? It's the Leica. But you know what it is it's...
How much is the Panasonic that you're talking about? How much is
that like $400. A little bigger than this, but it has the lens comes out. It doesn't go all the way in.
Uh-huh.
So it takes fantastic pictures, but I'll never use it because I can't put it in my pocket.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got one of the. I've got a Canon S5 something.
Mm-hmm.
Got a nice wide angle lens.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bought an extra flash thing. You know, so it doesn't. So the wide angle lens doesn't catch that shadow. You have to have a one in the bullpen. And so this makes me look like a pro walking around this thing.
Yeah.
There's this big thing bouncing against my chest.
How much is this one?
At Best Buy, it's only $250 and change.
Maybe I'll just go get that one because that's all I need for a snapshot.
And having the video, like the 720 video, is nice.
So there's a video.
Yeah.
And it's
that's awesome.
Better quality than this other thing I have.
Yeah.
Just because the the density of the image.
So. Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. I
would definitely go with that one.
We were watching Test on the.
Do you mind as long as I have this out?
No, please.
The new Canon that shoots 1080i,
okay.
The still camera.
Yeah. I'm gonna try flash once because I want to use natural light here. Sorry. Something just happened.
What happened?
This is a new thing entirely. There's a command. There's some kind of command. There's a little head.
Auto?
I press it, and what happens is one of you guys' face pops up, close up, as I'm watching the screen.
Wow.
I don't know what's going on.
I don't think I pushed anything.
Okay. Try again. Here, just try it. Just hold your finger down, and you'll see it decided to highlight your face for some reason and made you bigger. You see what I mean?
Oh, it's not. Maybe I need two people in the frame because he's probably just pulling focus and pulling exposure from.
All right. Do playback to see if it actually took two shots. Yep. It's just doing exposure and focus.
Okay.
Oh.
So they're not making it, right?
What's that?
They're not making it. We should give it a shot again.
I'll give you
the kill rights. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That one's a little scary.
It is a little scary. Too much
kill
context.
If you don't like it, yeah, I trust your judgment entirely. So just kill the ones you don't. I'm almost there, but I'd like to hang on to it for another minute or two. Do you think I can possibly get a Coke with a slice of
lemon rock?
A regular chip.
She's really cute. Who's she?
Oh, yeah. You know her? Or?
I didn't get to see who it actually was.
Oh, sorry.
It's Carrie Mulligan.
Oh, yeah. She's the Sundance breakout actress from, what's the movie?
An Education.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, she's cute.
She's going to be the next Audrey Hepburn, as they say.
Yeah. She's really something. I mean. No, but she's in the Michael Mann thing. That's where I saw her at the Michael Mann.
And you like her in person as well?
I think she's delicious.
Yeah.
I love her. But it's rare for a role as good as that. I mean, she's mm-hmm. really got it. But there's that thing going on at her side where she's got a downturn
mm-hmm.
thing going on in her mouth. There's kind of a melancholy thing.
Uh-huh.
Old soul thing.
Yeah.
Is what you get from her. Plus the just being 23 and, you know, really.
Yeah.
And it's really quite a combination.
Yeah.
Because anybody can be 23 and peppy and, you know.
Yeah.
But the old soul thing is what plays.
It's a very special thing, yeah.
Who's the guy do you think I could take? The guy in the picture?
What about the guy in the picture?
Who is he? Can I
take? Oh, who she's with him.
Yeah.
I think he's a native from England.
Fuck that guy.
I mean, it's
So
is
he
it,
is
it serious?
But he's not a, I don't think he's a manager or anyone who's delivering anything to her. I think he's struck me as a good friend.
Oh.
Not a love interest.
Maybe. I couldn't tell.
This is important information. We need to get this next time.
Thanks, Richard. So let me just try one with a flash. Okay, here we go. Not there. Okay. Yeah. One more time.
I like the one with the natural lighting.
Okay. How do I? Okay. Yeah.
Got some options.
I don't like the way it glares your face.
Yeah.
No, you kind of feel the restaurant more though.
Right.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a
restaurant. So have you entered a realm where you fly business class?
You know,
first class?
Believe it or not, I've never flown anything other than coach my whole life.
Me neither.
And there was a Canada press tour coming up, and it's going to make me sound more self-righteous than I am, honestly, but like I was just like, you know what? Independent film should not be spending this kind of money right now. Independent film to survive, when it's smart, is making stuff cheap and asking only for a small profit so that, you know, we can all go home happy. You know, when my brother and I made the Puffy Chair, we spent $70,000 on a 30-city U.S. theatrical release, you know, and we rolled out digitally and didn't, you know, and the movie made $250,000 in the theaters and we made a profit. And that to me, you know, it's like, what movie that makes $250,000 and has a profit, you know? And so everything after that became a cult hit on DVD, and it's just, that's what you should do. So, you know, I just think, like, be smart, let's all keep our jobs, you know, and be humble. But I'm not 6'8 and 275 pounds, so if I was, I'd be talking a whole different story, you know.
You remind me of something I remember hearing François Truffaut say in an interview about in the 60s when his films would break even. They'd break out the champagne.
Yeah.
And they felt pretty good about that.
Yeah. So, you know, please, yeah. People get very stuck in these models of what you have to do and what you need to be impressed. You know, certain moves, like Hump Day, I think, you know, it's smart for Josh and I to come out and spend the money doing these press days because I think the movie can break out, you know. But, you know, smaller movies, like, it's like, just do phone interviews and email interviews and iChats and don't spend all this money and, you know, like, be smart. So, it depends on the film, I guess.
They're not spending that much money.
I know. I think case in point, Magnolia is it's appropriate for this level, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
When was the decision made with Magnolia? Was that, I can't remember, was it announced at Sundance?
It was at Sundance, it was about day four. Okay.
Was there any kind of a bidding thing going on?
There were multiple companies involved, and I think about four, which quickly whittled down to like three very serious, and then, you know, Magnolia is very good with these kinds of movies in particular, and, you know, the sort of the mainstream indie on some level, you know, it's right for this movie.
And really, you know, Eamon's super smart, as is Tom Quinn, they had a plan. They, you know, they had, you know, it wasn't, I feel like they really got the movie. And Eamon came up to me, I don't know if he said the same to you, he's like, I fucking hate mumblecore movies. He's like, I've never liked
He didn't movies. Say the same to me, because he's passed on all of my movies before, and I think that would be a sensitive subject.
But, he really you know, wanted to try to figure out a way to set this one apart, which I think they've done a good job of.
Yeah.
You know, without kind of killing the authenticity of how it was made or who the people involved were. Who we really liked, though, who I keep running into, is David Finkel?
From Oscilloscope.
And Adam?
Mm-hmm. They're amazing.
Those guys are so wonderful. Mm-hmm. And every time I run into
them, they do great movies.
They were interested in the movie. You know, it just it didn't work out for a couple reasons. But we just absolutely love them and are so creative and are stepping in to fill a role in independent distribution that I think everybody else is running away from.
Yeah.
And doing it with such heart and, you know,
and such they're great.
Do we have
great? I thought it was
great. Really bring the Vino Santo from my homemade wine. A little bit.
A little bit?
One thing. Like this. No, like this. No, like this. Like this. Okay. All right. Vino Santo. I'm from Spain, Barcelona. I'm
sounds
from Barcelona.
Wonderful, thank you.
You've been in Barcelona?
Very nice street.
You ever been to Barcelona, Spain?
I was just in Barcelona late May.
I'm from Barcelona. This wine came from Tenerife, north of Tenerife. I've been wandering there for a couple hundred years. Generation.
I'm actually okay.
One thing.
No, I don't drink. But
you don't drink?
No, thank you.
You don't drink, but you drink a scotch, huh?
Good. I'll just have that little set.
Thank
here.
You very much.
Salud.
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 Salud. One more for the ladies.
Salud. Very sweet.
40.
Vino Santo.
We were at, we met in Barcelona and Susan.
Oh, great.
Drove down to.
That's fantastic, man.
A little town called Las Negras.
Where is that on the Costa del Sol? Like on the.
It's near Almería.
Okay.
And, it's, I read about it on...
Marbella, I hear you say Costa del Sol.
Yes.
Marbella, Puerto Banús, Palma, Mallorca.
Marbella, very beautiful. I've not been to Mallorca, but I've been to Marbella. Been to Malaga. I've heard that Mallorca and Menorca are just beautiful and crazy.
You can go from here in January, February, March, special flight.
Yeah.
You're swimming, nice side. I really want to rain for 200 years in the north.
Uh-huh. Beautiful.
My father from Barcelona.
Wow. You guys, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Miguel.
You're in Spain. We go out every night. Mm-hmm. Every day. Here, you work like a robot.
Yeah.
This is the life in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
No choice. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Anyway, a journalist friend was there in the 80s, Las Negras, and he talked about you. Spent 2-3 days there with a ball of passions.
Yeah.
We went to Granada, we went to...
oh, that's great.
I went to Granada for the first time last year.
Did you go to the inner old town? I mean, that's the bigger city, of course, is not that distinctive. Did you go in, you know...
Oh, you're talking about Granada, Spain. I'm talking about the island of Granada. Never mind. Grenada.
All right. I was. Anyway, I knew that you guys had something. I got Jet to come. 20. We just turned 21.
Awesome.
He tends to be exacting, demanding, fickle.
Mm-hmm.
A real journalist in the making.
I guess. He's doing pretty well.
That's great.
Pretty well so far. Have you seen Hurt Locker? Have you seen?
Loved it.
We both enjoyed it a lot.
I thought they did a great job, man. And that...
Jeremy Renner, man.
Yeah. It was something, right?
He's good. He's good. He did... I mean, that was... All of them, though. Mm. Anthony Mackie, too.
I mean, that was a lot.
That was really... which I'm sure she had something to do with it, but those parts were so full of potential... melodramatic pitfalls, and they didn't fall into any of them.
Yeah.
David Denby wrote that some people occasionally will write him and saying when he talks about how he doesn't like movies about blowing shit blowing up.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
And he says, hey man, you know, chill down about this because some of us like to watch shit get blown up.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, well, you know, I would say to him about vis-a-vis the Hurt Locker. This realism is totally sold me on this.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff I like to see blow
up. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It requires a lot less blow-ups to make it.
It was done for emotional effect and not titillation, which I think are two very different motivations. And, you know,
in a big action movie, in like the dumb big action movie, you want it to blow up because you think it's going to be fun. In this movie, you don't want it to blow up because you really care about the characters and don't want them to die.
I wouldn't go to see Transformers Revenge of the Fallen with a knife in my bank.
No, dude. I mean,
I know what that is without seeing anything, just reading the reviews.
Well, you know. Also considering it's a movie based on a toy directed by Michael Bay. I mean, that's not...
That's pretty incredible when you put it that way.
What was the best thing? I knew someone... I mean, I'm sure I shouldn't be talking shit on the record, but somebody who worked on Pearl Harbor, where literally at one point he was... Like, some actor was freaking out, and Bay came out, and his direction was, hey, trust the box office. And walked away.
You know, there's one time that...
That's me at ease every time.
At the very beginning of Pearl Harbor, I was very impressed by something he did. He had to fight for it, he told me. Mm-hmm. It starts off with black screen and the music. Just, you know, mm-hmm. I thought, oh my God, this is going to be an overture, because you don't see anything.
Sure.
You just hear this kind of the theme. You mm-hmm. know? And then after about maybe 4 or 5 seconds, then it opens up without the initial credits or anything. And I said, oh, there's a smidgen there.
Something happened here.
He's got an idea.
Yeah.
It's not just about
an idea.
The box office.
Yeah. How'd that play out?
The movie itself?
Yeah.
You gotta at least admire the craft or the chops
in
the attack sequence. Mm-hmm. The attack sequence is bad. It's overwrought. It doesn't feel as good as, for instance, Hurt Locker, but it's...
I mean, somebody's going to be directing those movies, and it might as well be him, because he likes doing it, and he's good at it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he gets great blowjobs.
You know, he does... I saw him...
I mean, off the record, you should tell him the Jonah Hill story.
I can't do that. I can't do that to Jonah. Yeah, he's an interesting dude.
He does have girly girlfriends, Michael Bay. I did notice that at the Pearl Harbor premiere out at Honolulu. You know, they're just too well built, you know, too pretty looking. You gotta have that, like I said, that mixture.
Yeah.
Something, some kind of current going on inside, plus their
book. Something, you know. Yeah.
I'm kind of feeling, I would love to grab a coffee somewhere. And smoke a cigarette before our next thing.
Yeah.
If we all want to do that together, that'd
sounds
be great.
Yeah, I'll follow you.
Excellent.